Hello, I'm Alice, and welcome to Team GP Perspectives, peer-to-peer conversations digging into anything and everything general practice, brought to you by the RCGP Membership Communities and Engagement Team. A warning for listeners that this episode may contain some descriptions of war and conflict. In August 2021, the world watched as the Taliban executed an unchallenged takeover of Kabul, leading to Afghanistan once again living under Taliban rule. As citizens, vulnerable groups and allies evacuated the city, the BMA released a statement, co-signed by the RCGP, fellow Royal Medical Colleges and governing bodies, condemning the oppression and danger being faced by Afghan women, in particular, female healthcare workers who are now banned from practicing medicine and caring for their patients. A few days before this recording took place, Russian military forces had invaded Ukraine, forcing a reported 1 million Ukrainians to evacuate to neighbouring countries. These wars highlight the adversities faced by countless doctors and clinicians displaced from their home countries, either through conflict or persecution, having to leave behind careers, family and stability to restart in a foreign country. According to the BMA's latest figures, there are approximately 2,000 refugee doctors in the UK, and in the lead up to Refugee Week on 20th of June, Team GP Perspectives will be releasing a series of episodes focusing on refugee and displaced doctors, their voices, health needs as patients, and the organisations set up to support their retraining and settlement. In this episode, I'm honoured to be joined by three doctors who will be sharing their journeys and experiences from displacement to rebuilding. If you could briefly introduce yourselves and your remit.
My name is Mir Karimullah Zia. I am an Afghan GP. We both, my wife Faika Zia, are graduated from Balkh Medical College. Balkh is a big province in the northeast side of Afghanistan. In 2000, Afghanistan was under control of Taliban, exception three provinces. We were working there in the hospital as my wife was working as a gynecologist and in the hospital, and I was busy with surgical department. But later on, it was very difficult to continue our task, even at that time in 2000. We moved to another district by the name of Farhar, which was under Ahmad Shah Massoud control. And we started to provide services as Dr. Faika started basic emergency obstetric care, which was very important at that time. She was providing services for 150,000 people. And I was working in an OPD clinic in that district. Fortunately, in 2001, a big change came to Afghanistan that Americans with NATO forces came to Afghanistan and invaded Taliban and would get them out from the country. Hopefully, they just established an interim government under Hamid Karzai control. And at that time, many NGOs were coming from Western countries. An NGO came by the name of Merlin to our province, which was a British. They invited me to work with them. Then they had known about my wife, and also my wife, Faika, joined. I was working as a coordinator, as their country part, and my wife was working with MSH, Mother Cares. Yeah. We have worked with them, as you know, at that time, the mortality of women and children under five were too high in our country because we had lost everything, you know, all health facilities was empty and people were difficult to access to health facility and a lot of challenge because of long war in Afghanistan. Then Merlin started in our county in Tahar province to establish mobile clinics in some needy area. As we did emergency, we provided emergency services. Later on, we fixed the clinics. People were coming to the clinics and receiving health services.
My name is Faika and my last name is Zia. After my graduation from faculty, I started working with several NGOs and also with government hospital as a GP doctor. And also, I had experiences about it, obstetric and gynecology, and I worked in gynecology and obstetric wards as a GP for many years in Tahar province. Also, I worked with several NGOs like Swedish Committee, MSF, Marlene, UNICEF, GIZ, and a lot of clinics. About 23 years, I have experiences with working at several NGOs. And also, we trained a lot of midwives because in our country, we don't have many trained midwives. At the beginning, we start with very because at the beginning of 2001 and 2002, there wasn't educated girls available in our county. On that time, we started with old ladies that they have some experiences as a TBA, traditional TBAs. We trained a lot of traditional TBAs for the remote areas. Mm-hmm. And then after 2004 or 2005, we start Malin established a lot of clinics and we need a lot of midwives. On that time, they bring midwives from neighbor countries like Tajikistan and they worked for the people. At the time being, people started education and girls a little bit did their education, like 6 class, 7 class, 8 class. We at the beginning, we take that ladies and trained as a midwife. Then it improved. In this moment, we had trained more than 150 midwives for our county in Tahar province. And they are working in very remote areas. They do services for mothers and children. It is a big opportunity for the people. And it is a big chance for the women that they can get benefit from the midwives. And also, I'm happy that I trained that ladies as a midwife and they do services for them.
I'm Nasser Ibrahim. Originally, I'm from Egypt, and I graduated from Faculty of Medicine Al Azhar University in December 2007. I got grade excellent with honor, but I was prevented from the government to be an administrator in the Faculty of Medicine. Later on, in January, in revolution in January 2011, after Mubarak gone, so I was administrator in forensic medicine and clinical toxicology in Faculty of Medicine at Al Azhar University. I stayed there for 3 years. During these 3 years, I got my master's degree in clinical toxicology. And after COOP again, so I was dispatched from the university again. And I was attacked by the government regime. So this pushed me to go out of Egypt. I skipped to Sudan, then to Malaysia. In Malaysia, I finished my PhD in forensic anthropology. And then I decided to come to the UK and I applied to asylum seeker. At that moment, I continue my career here, thankfully, by helping of Rich. We will come to speak on Rich, I think. So at that time, I finished my OT, English test, PLAP 1, PLAP 2. And then I did MSRA for GP training. Now I'm GP trainee, GP ST1. I'm married and I have 3 kids, 11 years old, 8 years old, and 6 years old. I'm staying in Manchester.
Thank you so much for joining me today. My first question is, what was life and practicing medicine like in your home countries?
Yeah, we started to work in 2000. From our own hospital in the county, providing services to the people, till 2001. In 2001, change came. That NATO forces and Americans came to Afghanistan, and big changes came. Taliban withdrew and left Afghanistan. Then many NGOs came to Afghanistan as we joined NGOs. At the initial phase, I, my wife, we both joined Merlin, and we continued to 2003. We just provided services emergency to the people, needy people, especially to the front lines where the Taliban, you know, destroyed many houses and people lost everything. 2003, especially there were 2 big challenges in Afghanistan. High mortality of mother and children under 5 and a lot of positive cases of malaria. Malaria was killing a lot of high people were suffering malaria. My wife was working with Marilyn, and she was continuing mother-child healthcare. You know, as in Afghanistan at that time, the mortality of women were 1,800 per 100 live birth, you know, mortality. And also in for children, about 128 to 91 deaths per 1,000 children under 5. It was so high figures. I joined to work at that time. Marilyn was providing, you know, jointly with WHO malaria services, and really it was so effective that Marilyn and WHO brought a lot of impregnated bednet to control malaria to Afghanistan, and we started training, capacity building of health workers and distribution bednets to pregnant women, to children, to those households that they were at risk. By 2007, as my wife still was continuing, just at that time, Marilyn had midwifery school in our province. That Dr. Faika was busy, was leading that school. And I was still working by another European NGO by the name of Helene Tipiu, which was Netherlands-based. And still I was working and combating malaria program at that time, till 2010. And 2010, a lot of changes. It means at that time, there malaria was not a big problem still. But unfortunately, high mortality of women and children still was a big challenge. Americans with NATO, they developed health policy with assistance of Afghanistan Health Ministry, a policy for health. However, it started in 2005, but in 2010, it vastly published everywhere. Many health facilities developed, established for people. People could access for a health facility for health centers. I joined them for that policy. It was called BPHS, Basic Package Health Services. It is all types of health facility are included inside. And I was working with that till 2019. And 2019, suddenly a big challenge occurred, which was COVID-19, a pandemic. It was spread and all people were suffering. In our county, in our province, we did not have any PCR lab. And I joined NGO by the name of Arahon and many other undeveloped countries. They are providing services. As we got funding by USAID and by EU, especially UK people, many a lot of fund. And we established a PCR lab in my country, especially in my province. People could get services. A lot of samples were examined, tested, and it was really a standard. And beside that, we provided other services like health education, like we distributed IC material for people. We trained or built capacity building of health staff in our province to control or to work against COVID-19, to do not let people to be, you know, risk more. And really it was too effective and big achievement. We got just few people about, you know, in a million, about 120 like this. But the main cause was not COVID. They had other heart failure, different kind of type of disease that they died during 3 years. But others, they could get prompt diagnosis and they could receive their advices, and it was easy for them to get the diagnosis by PCR lab.
In hospital, we work as a GP and we treat all of the patients. One day we have to do a GP in the OPD clinic. We see all the women with different type of illnesses, and according to the guidelines, we treat them and we give them medication, and also if they need some laboratory examination, everything that they needed, we provide them. And also I had a private clinic as a GP in my house. There was two midwives and two nurses and one pharmacist working with me. we did services for a private site also after 4 o'clock. I had a busy life in Afghanistan because there wasn't too much women doctors, especially in our province. So people need, for that reason, we had to work a lot. I worked from 5 o'clock in the morning up to 9 or 10 o'clock in the evening, because at the 5 o'clock, when I get up, I go to one high education institute, private one. I was busy with that one also for training, midwife training. They had a lot of midwifery students and I was head of their department. So up to 8 o'clock, I worked there. Then I went to our CME, CME's Community Midwifery Education, that ran by Marlene and other NGOs and the under leadership of government. It was mixed with government things. And I worked there up to 4 o'clock. Then I came to home and I do my private clinics. I had a busy days in Afghanistan and I was happy because at least I can help with the women, with mothers. It was good for me and also for them. I was happy, but I did a lot of work. I had training midwives in CME. Each batch had about 22, 24. And the last batch, we had 30 students in batch. And the duration of the time was about 2 years. And there was 500 trained midwives, qualified midwives, jointly we trained these ladies. 2013, I want to take some more education. So I went to India and get my master's degree in public health from India, OPGS Institute, Rajasthan.
You mentioned there aren't many women doctors or clinicians in Afghanistan. Do you know what the situation might be like now?
Unfortunately, more of the lady doctors left the country, and there is, after this Taliban, there is force for the woman. I know it's a big challenge for the woman in the hospital because experienced doctor is not available, especially in our province, unfortunately.
So in Egypt, after graduation, we start to work in primary care. But it's, unfortunately, there is no supplies, nothing. It's not well prepared. There's no medications. We are treating our patient and just prescribe some medication. They come to any pharmacy. And it's like due to poverty and corruption. So there are many challenges in Egypt. So this discouraged many doctors from practicing in Egypt, like low salaries, so that pushed many doctors to go out of Egypt. There's corruption in the Ministry of Health, in the government ministries. 13 jobs booked to 13 families. You can imagine, like my graduated excellent with honor, and I couldn't get a job in Faculty of Medicine until the revolution come. The number of doctors in Egypt, like 1,103. So like 1,000, one doctor for every 1,000 patients. 9,000 doctors are graduating every year. There are many doctors in prison now. There are 1,000 doctors in prison. Out of 60,000 activists are in the prison, 1,000 of them are in prison. That due to their activity against corruption and after military coup. After my graduation, I worked in my private clinic, like as SHB in Egypt. You can imagine there are some patients who couldn't have the money to go to doctors. They just go to the pharmacy and get some medication, can get antibiotics, and there are widespread resistance, antibiotic resistance. And also there is some patients, they have anaphylaxis due to just going to, there is no evidence-based research for practice. So that's why every doctor just manages the patient according to his mood. Even with this, I still work in Egypt, and because everyone like his comfort zone and don't work to go out of something he's used to do. But because I was forced to go out of Egypt, so I went to Sudan and then to Malaysia. So in Malaysia, it's much better. There is a very good system. But working in Malaysia is very difficult to foreigners. It's only classically to Malaysians, unfortunately. But I managed to work as a lecturer of internal medicine in some private university for 1.5 years. and that was good. That helped me in my PhD. And also during my PhD, I managed to publish many articles, and that was helpful. Again, publishing in Egypt is very low. So I, during my master's degree, I did not publish any article. During my PhD in Malaysia, I published with participation with my colleagues around 16 articles. Recently in Egypt, they asked everyone in order to finish his master's degree to publish at least 2 articles, and that's nice. But before that, there was no publishing. I think working in Egypt because of poverty and corruption and lack of supplies in government hospitals, that forced many doctors to go out of Egypt. Many of them go to the Gulf area, and some of them, they're USMLE and went to America, and then some of them come here to the UK. And they have very good quality, but unfortunately, day after day, medical service deteriorating in Egypt.
It's concerning to hear that many doctors are currently incarcerated due to activism in Egypt. I wanted to ask you about your journey leaving your country and if you experienced any fears, struggles or stigma when arriving in the UK or Ireland.
Yeah, in mid-July 2001, very huge battle started in northern province, and later on it was going on in all around Afghanistan between Taliban and Islamic Republic of government. We were busy with our business in our country, which called Tahar, and located in northeast Afghanistan, bordering with Republic Tajikistan. It is 350 kilometers away from Kabul, capital of Afghanistan. I was busy with COVID-19 response project funded by European Union for implementation for 2 counties, Tahar and Kunduz. Taliban surrounded all around our county, and civil fire was exchanging between them for about 20 days. As some bullets were coming even to our house, and we were hiding ourselves, and sometimes children were afraid. After 2 weeks, it became worse, and we left the house with all belongings and went to Kabul. As it was free of fighting, Kabul, and started new life there. But we had not thought that Taliban will capture over even Kabul, as political negotiation was about to make a combined government with Taliban. We were in Kabul for 3 weeks, living hopefully to have a normal life as we had before. Unfortunately, by 19th of August, I had gone to main office. Our main office was in Kabul, as some other colleagues evacuated there too. I was invited for a meeting at that time, in the morning at 10 o'clock. 10 o'clock time, the security officer told us the Taliban entered to city. Please go home soon. While we had got out of our office, all people were scattered and escaping to non area locations. I walked because of a lot of vehicles were moving very slow in the streets, and come home having started contacting with my previous colleagues. Fortunately, after applying for American's visa, I got evacuation visa. Went to airport and entered to the airport, talked with American military as they agreed us at the beginning. But after crossing one night inside the airport, on next day the airport tarmac our papers and were rejected with 200 other people were waiting inside the airport. We had to leave hiding for a month. We stayed indoors in Kabul. Few days later, on a bomb exploded at the airport, killing 13 American soldiers and 100 Afghans, and more than 100 injured, as you may have seen by media. And they reject all people around airport, and people were afraid to go to the airport anymore. I've contacted my previous colleagues, Ivan Hogas, who is a nurse midwife from British, and Peter Leffrey from America, and told him the whole story, and they told me, please wait for us for the next advices in Kabul. We knew that the advancing threat 20 years earlier under Taliban rule, women were banned from participating in associated girls from attending school and many other forcible actions, that at this time they searched out home in our own county too. And this was the life as hopefully after contacting with my fellows, my previous colleagues, they connected, they communicated the issue with Ireland government, especially with Amnesty International. And we got visa. They sent me the visa to Kabul. Kabul, we were waiting about 2 weeks. Then we came from Kabul to Mazar-i-Sharif, another big province, which is called Balkh. And we fly from Balkh and came to Macedonia. We were in Macedonia for 1 week. After 1 week, we came through to Erlangen. For the time being, we are here in a county which is called Roscommon in Erlangen and living here. And the families, yeah, we have contacts with our family in Afghanistan. The situation is not good, as you may have heard or watched the TV media. The few days they start this houses checking without any permission. They enter to people's houses and check everything. And many other threats daily they carried out here. And people really, they are in terrible and no work, no food, no movement, just waiting. And here, since we came, we are looking to any opportunity we bought to get job.
The time that we were in Tahor, there was a lot of stressful life because all around our place was Taliban and there was war and bulletin coming in our house, and we were very frightened. When we arrived here in Ireland, there is no any stigma, no any stress. Fortunately, our children are going to a school. My daughter is about 17 years. She is going to secondary school, and my big son is also in secondary school, and the last one is in primary school, and they are settling very well with the community and with the school, and they are very happy. At the moment, I'm very happy that we are here and we are safe and there is no war. Have a normal life here now.
After the military coup in 2013, in June 2013, I was one of the activists against the military coup, like my friends. Unfortunately, we were attacked in Rabaa, and we were attacked after that. They were seeking about us everywhere. I was nominated as well by the government with many of my friends. So I was hiding in Egypt. And even I couldn't go to my clinic. Some of my friends were prison now and still in prison now, till now. I decided to go out of Egypt because I cannot see my family. I couldn't live in Egypt, literally. So I escaped to Sudan, and from Sudan, I went to Malaysia. I applied for a visa and to the UK. I come on my own here, and my family was in Egypt. I applied for a course in forensic, and I finished this course. And then I applied as an asylum seeker. First, I was in a hotel, and it is good, but the people that you are in, they are not doctors. They are not like an environment that you are not used to live with. And then I went to Liverpool with a better situation. In Liverpool, there was St. Bride Church. It was very close to my housing. So I went there and I asked about, I need any help in order to finish my PLAP. And they fortunately told me about REACH, a REACH organization, which is a refugee and asylum seeker supporting. This was like a golden key in my life. Because before that, I was very depressed because I can't work and I'm here alone, away from my family. And that was very depressed because all my life I used to study hard and got the best grade and did my master's degree, my PhD, and published many articles. And so this is my life. So I was stuck at that point. But when I knew about REACH, I applied there. I was traveling from Liverpool to Manchester. REACH is based in Salford Hospital. Unfortunately, there was a covering that travel costs at that point, because the Home Office was giving us just £5 every day. So at that point, the Home Office decided to transfer me to Crewe, which was far away from Manchester. So I asked them that I'm studying in REACH, and if you could manage to just allocate me around Salford, that would be great. And they asked me to just sign a form that I have to accept the next offer even if I don't like. So I signed this. And fortunately, they moved me to Manchester, thankfully. And then I continued my journey in Reach. I was very happy because I have a plan and target, and I was on the track, on the right way. And I saw myself is improving day after day in English and practicing, understanding the NHS system and many supports Reach are offering. In Reach, starting from assessment first, just to see if what's your level in English and maybe basic English, maybe advanced English. I was in advanced English. And then after that, prepare us to OAT exam. At that time, also, we have clinical support with many lectures and modules and case scenarios and communication skills, many things, a lot of things we are doing in Reach. And I'm very lovely volunteers. They are GP volunteers. And also, there are many GPs which are volunteers. And most of our colleagues in Reach, they are like in 30 or 40 years old or over. So many of them prefer to apply for GP. And at that time, after finishing my OT exam, I also studied for PLAP 1 and was it. And Reach is supplying and supporting for the exam courses as well. And that's very nice and supporting. And also supply for even GMC registration and also things in cooperation with British Medical Association. So they can support. And also refugee aid also support refugee doctors in this context. So this is regarding my arriving, regarding fears and my struggle. Regarding stigma, I didn't find stigma, to be honest. The UK is the best country over the world, which are supporting refugees. There are many diversity here, and they love each other. I love also like foreigners, and I very rarely, you can just see sometimes some teenagers just annoying some foreigners, but all in all, there is tolerance here, and they're accepting foreigners and refugee. And here you can see many women with the niqab covering their face, and no one is annoying them. You cannot find this in France or any other country. Many things you can practice. You can go to the mosque, do whatever you need without annoying and without anything. I can see Islamophobia is not that much here. It's very rare because we have a very good system here in the UK. The government is supporting the refugee, to be honest. And like what I mentioned, the Home Office, when I asked them, I need to be allocated. And she said they accepted that. So I couldn't see any stigma here, to be honest. My friends in other countries, it's very different. Very different. Australia, nice. France, Sweden. There are many countries. It's just not nice like here. Also, the university credit or the council was supporting us in after getting my status, my refugee status, until getting the job. So that was very nice. They were supporting for to build your CV, your portfolio, so and Enrich as well was building my portfolio. So it was very nice to have support until getting the job.
Dr. Zia, Dr. Fiker, you've been in Ireland for about 5 months now, since October. Do you know the route that you need to take to start entering into the medical workforce there, or do you know of organisations who can support you through that retraining?
Yeah, first of all, really, we need to get our recognized documents. And really, retraining is needed for us. For example, maybe for Dr. Fiker will be a kind of orientation. But it depends to the job we will get here. We don't know yet what kind of job we will, you know, succeed to find in their system. For example, health HS system in Ireland. It is not known yet. But really, retraining is needed for us at that time. But shortly, we don't need, for example, a year or 5 months, maybe just for 2 weeks like this, to just to get an orientation how to go further?
Just to become familiar with the DS system, nothing else. The practice is the same every place we do. The antenatal post, I think the scales are the same. Just we should learn the system, or especially the machines that they use, or the devices.
Have you noticed any difference in, you know, medical practice?
Now, there are many modern equipment to use, for example, for diagnosis. We had in Afghanistan, but small equipment, you know, simple equipments, not as the equipments which are available in Ireland. But we need orientation. Soon we can get familiar with these kind of advices. In my work in prevention, in preventive care, and there is no device, no, just small, you know, simple orientation will be enough for me. But for devices, for FICA, if she goes to gynecologist department, really she needed, you know, and a longer orientation about a month, less than a month like this. You know, because, for example, she was using ultrasound in our country. Maybe, you know, there are a lot of ultrasounds different from our own, you know, ultrasound. Maybe a bit more moderner. And she will get orientation soon and become familiar to use it here.
Do you know any organizations or projects who would be able to support you through that?
Well, still we are searching, we are looking. That is a good opportunity if we could find anyone. For nowadays, we're doing nothing. It is good time, good opportunity for us if we could find anywhere, any organization to get retraining or orientation. That would be nice. I have contact with some Irish GPs, but which is not enough for me, because we need to find someone who can strongly support us. But unfortunately, we had British friends. If she was well, we would have better support. She had wide communication with everyone. We're looking, we're searching to find any, you know, one, any organization to get orientation, which is a good time for us.
Would you be interested in GP training, Dr. Fika, or would you like to continue with your current specialty?
Yeah, why not? But obstetric is better, like antenatal, postnatal, delivery, and other things. It is better for me.
Dr. Ibrahim has mentioned the time it's taken to go into retraining and to complete his current training. Is this something that you factored in thinking about your future medical career?
Short-term training is better.
Thank you. My final question to all of you is, what are your hopes and wishes for the future, whether for your family or your career or your countries?
First of all, I hope to get our recognized documents in Ireland as soon as possible, which is the one of our wishes. And second wish, we are looking to get our children, you know, education, even higher education in Ireland or around here, any Europe countries. Third wishes, we're looking, searching to get job, to immerse our life here and start working as other people here. And the fourth wishes, you know, we want our own country, freedom and independence, and withdraw from Taliban as soon as possible, you know, to be back to our country.
I found some job, it will be better for me, because being jobless, it is very boring, and passing the day, it hasn't good thing for us to be at home all the day without any activity. I want to have a job, and I want to do some services. Still, I have energy. I want to work, not to be at home without anything. And my children, their education is very important for me, and I hope they will learn from this country better for them, as good future.
Before speaking about my hopes, I just would like to add something about my retraining. It took like 2 years to finish my exams, like 9 months in English and 4 months PLEP 1 and another 6 months in PLEP 2 due to COVID issues. thankfully to reach. I, after passing PLAP 2 and get registered to GMC, they helped me to get a clinical attachment in Salford Hospital, and that was really nice. After that, they also managed to do what's called clinical practical training for 3 months. Tester, you can work without responsibility, work as FY1 without responsibility, get some money. It's not that much, but it's helpful. After the 3 months, that facilitates to have a job in Salford Hospital as well. To reach the supporting to get the first job, which is the most difficult job, because being out of working for 5 years, so that big gap, so that makes the first job difficult. But by helping of Reach, they built up my portfolio, and I did many things to do my portfolio, like teaching, communication skills, reflections, and I knew how can I write reflection according to Gibson criteria. So they were very, very supportive, very good effort from Reach at that time. I managed to get the first job, even training about meeting for job interview. So all of this support was helped and facilitated by Reach. Then coming back to your questions, hopes for the future. All right, so my hope for future to finish my GP training to assist for the Royal College of General Practice, Educational Supervisor, and to participate in research, to work as a lecturer, as part-time lecturer in medical education. I'm planning to arrange a project to have GP training like here in Egypt later on after the political environment improve in Egypt, because I found training here is very robust and very, very good. Ensure that any doctors who can pass this GP training is a reliable doctor and a very good profession. My home to just build up this project later on in Egypt and help to improve the primary care health in Egypt.
A huge thanks to our guests for sharing their experiences today, and thank you for listening to Team GP Perspectives. Look out for the other episodes in this special series where I will be talking to GPs involved with projects supporting displaced doctors and GPs with a special interest in migrant and vulnerable patient health needs. Check out the description below to find related links and resources. And if you're enjoying these conversations, then please share them with a friend or tweet us at Team GP. That's all for now. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.